We're back on Drive Time Sports, continuing our conversation right now with Danny Tarkanian, the son of legendary college basketball coach Jerry Tarkanian, and also the author of the new book, Rebel with a Cause. It's the true story of Jerry Tarkanian. Just looking at what your father has accomplished, I mean, it's absolutely incredible when you take a look at the amount of wins that he put together in a decade span. I mean, it even eclipses some of the greatest college basketball coaches to ever live. For instance, a 10-year period from 83 to 92 at UNLV, 307 wins. That's more than what Bob Knight ever did in Indiana. It's more what I like to call John Wooden, the greatest coach, I believe, of all time. It's more than he accumulated with UCLA, more than Adolph Rupp, more than Fog Allen with the Kansas Jayhawks. And I know that some people could say, well, they play more games today, but nobody else has come close to that in a 10-year span. And so, Danny, as you and I were having a conversation off the cuff, you had mentioned that you wanted to talk about the way your father motivated players, which was a little bit unorthodox compared to some of the coaches that I just named.
Yeah, and you know, he only lost, I believe, 30 games during that 10-year period. So he lost games a year and was winning 30, which is, it hasn't been matched before. And they were on a run my dad was first out of UNLV to have even better teams. He had Ed O'Bannon, Charles O'Bannon, and Sean Tarver trying to come to UNLV. They took UCLA to the final, to the national championship in 85, and he had Jason Kidd committed as a sophomore. But that being said, wanted to get across in the book, one of the most important things to me is to show the kind of person my father had in his relationship with the players and why that led to such success. In the 60s and early 70s, the coaches back then were always considered the boss, tyrants. You know, they would yell and motivate their players through intimidation. Bobby Knight's a great example. My father was a complete opposite. He felt that if you got really close with these players, particularly ones that had problems off the court or in the classroom, and you created a close bond with them, you can get them to play harder than any other team in the country. And he would motivate us through sarcasm and wit. He would say something that, and I'll give you an example. When I was playing in 1983, we didn't play hard in practice one day, so he called the team together. And he said, "You guys are all a bunch of bandits. Next time you pick up your scholarship check, wear a mask and gun because you're robbing the university." And, you know, we're sitting there wanting to laugh because it's pretty darn funny, but scared to death by the way he said it. But what we did was we went out and we played harder than you could possibly imagine after that. And there's numerous examples of my father being like that. And also being very honest with players. When normally you wouldn't want to be honest, the politically correct people wouldn't accept these things. And I'll give another example. When I played, we were 24-0 and number one in the country, and some of our players were complaining my father favored our two best players, Sidney Green and Larry Anderson. So my dad called the team together and he said, "I understand some of you think I'm favoring Sid and Larry. I just want you to know that I am. Sid and Larry are carrying us. Without them, we wouldn't be 24-0. If we're on a desert island with one cantina of water, I'm going to make sure Sid and Larry have everything they want to drink. If there's anything left over, I might share with the rest of you." That's what all of us were thinking at that time. But you know what? We knew that he was honest, that he was telling us the truth, and deep down we also knew Larry and Sid were carrying us, and we ended up having a great team that year.
You were obviously around in 1990, around your dad, when UNLV wins the national championship. And that story, that's the one sad part. And I think this is just history, right? This is the way it works in sports. It's a "what have you done for me lately" type deal. While this team may have won a national championship in 1990, 1991 is probably, they're in the conversation to be the greatest college basketball team ever. And they didn't win a national championship. And I think it's a true testament to just how difficult it is to win a title when it's a one-game-and-done type scenario. Because your father had coached several teams that were more than capable of winning a national championship, but maybe none more so than that 1991 team.
Oh, absolutely. My dad will say unequivocally the 91 team was his best team they ever coached. They had a national schedule, a non-conference schedule of top 10 teams all across the board, including the number two team, Arkansas. They only had one game within 10 points in the entire season until the lost to Duke by two. And yeah, you're right. It's tough to repeat. And I know that there was a lot of pressure on those players. And then people forget how good Duke was. Duke had some great, great players on that team. Leitner and Hurley, two of the best college players ever. And Grant Hill, one of the great NBA players. It's not really a shocker in retrospect, but it was back then.
Looking at the accomplishments that your father put together, unfortunately, it did come to an end based off of really three players being photographed in a hot tub with a convicted sports event fixer, and it was never proven that those individuals took part in any sort of fixing, but at that particular time, it seemed like the damage was done. When you go back and you look at what your father still had left to accomplish at UNLV, he may be considered the greatest college basketball coach that ever lived if he was able to coach another, 10 years at the school.
Well, they had forced him out of UNLV because of those hot tub pitches when he was 60 years old. He had another 15 or 20 years to coach, and as I mentioned previously, he was bringing in better players at the end than they ever had at the beginning, and they would have won another several national championships. But when you talk about the hot tub pitcher, it's really that was the final straw of so much more. But I want to clarify something with the hot tub pitchers. The reason why it had such a major impact was when we lost to Duke by 2, there was a rumor spread by the athletic director that one of our players, Stacey Ogden, was in the locker room crying after the game and because he threw the game. It was a bunch of BS. That didn't happen, but they were trying to discredit my father so they can find a way to force him out. Those three players in the hot tub, first of all, the convicted felon, point shaver you're talking about, he had changed his name so people didn't know his background, and he was a former AAU coach in New York City, and he coached a bunch of players from back there, including Moses Scurry, who was one of the players in that hot tub. But when you talk about whether they point shaved, Moses Scurry and David Butler had won the national championship and graduated before that picture came out, and they weren't even on the team that lost to Duke the next year. The only player in the hot tub on the team that lost to Duke was Anderson Hutton. He was our best player. He had 30 or 32 points in the game. He obviously didn't throw the game. So there's nothing to it, but there was just accumulation of stuff. And I went through this in the book. I'll try to be real quick because I know this is taking a lot of time. Is when my father first came to UNLV, he was very controversial fighting the NCAA, bringing in those type of players that I mentioned. But UNLV, Las Vegas, had a horrible reputation too. So it was like a perfect match, Sin City with this controversial coach, Draker, and all these at-risk kids. Well, Las Vegas wanted to change his image in the late 80s as Steve Wynn was building the family casinos, and they brought in a new president who said that UNLV was going to be the Harvard of the West. When all that happened, my dad's still fighting the NCAA, and he's still bringing in the same kids, and they felt that my father's image was bringing down the university. There's a lot of quotes in the book from people who mentioned the same thing. So they forced my father out basically because they wanted to change the image of the university and felt my father's image was bringing him down. It really wasn't the hot tub picture. It was just the avenue that allowed them to get there.
Again, I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, I was fascinated by the idea of reading about Jerry Tarkanian's time with the San Antonio Spurs, because a lot of people don't remember that. It's such a small footnote when you look over the history of his career, but you did talk about that. I know it's a very short chapter because, well, it was a very short tenure with the San Antonio Spurs. What do you remember most about that?
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot to write about. Well, I just, the things that, the decisions that change your life and what happens is really big. My father was offered the job when he left UNLV by the Philadelphia 76ers. The owner loved my dad, and my dad loved Charles Barkley. And Charles wasn't a big name at that time. He had become the superstar he ultimately would. But the Sixers weren't very good, and my dad didn't feel he would have that much time left in his coaching career to turn them into a winner. When Larry Brown left San Antonio, San Antonio had one of the best teams in the NBA, so my dad jumped at it when he was offered that job. The only problem is three of his five starters weren't available when the season started. Two of them got hurt and were out the entire year, and the third one was the worst one. He was a great point guard named Rod Strickland that the Spurs didn't re-sign, let him go to the Portland Trailblazers. So my dad complained about the players that were on the team. They were losing. He lost 11 games out of 20, and that's more losses than he had in the last 3 years at UNLV. So he complained in the papers about his roster. So the owner and the general manager called him in and said, if you don't think you can win with this roster, you should leave. And my dad said, well, I think we can't win with this roster. So he left. The NBA is different. The owner and the general manager tells the coach what players he's going to coach. And in college, the coach gets to determine which players he's coaching. And that just didn't work for my father.
In the late 70s, there's a rumor that your dad was at least a front runner for the Los Angeles Laker coaching job. And again, revisionist history, just going back and looking at that Lakers 80s dynasty for your dad to coach a guy like Magic Johnson, who loved to play at the fast pace, right? I mean, that was showtime, right? How close was your dad to taking that job with the Los Angeles Lakers in the late 70s? And how special could that run have been with him at the helm?
Yeah, probably 30 minutes was the difference between him being a Laker coach and not. And my father said when the Lakers had the first draft and Magic put his name in it that the Lakers were going to win a bunch of championships because of how great Magic was. He knew how good they were going to be. First of all, the Lakers offered him a job, and actually there was a contract that was provided to my dad's agent, who was my dad's boyhood friend, close with them. His name was Vic Weiss, and I go through this in the book. Vic Weiss met with the owner of the Lakers, Jerry Buss, and I'm sorry. He met with Jerry Buss, and Jerry gave him the signed contract with his signature on it. And he was to meet my mother and father for dinner right after he left the Buss's meeting. And he was never seen again. Somehow, somebody got a hold of him, killed him, and stuck him in the trunk. And when my dad learned of it, he was very disheartened, and he still wanted to. Wasn't sure he wanted to go coach the NBA because he really loved the college game, and he decided not to go do it. I know he had a lot of regrets the rest of his life because we'd watch those NBA finals, and he'd say, "Isn't this big time? Look how much fun this would have been."
The next guy in line there in the 80s was going to have a lot of success with that Laker team. It really didn't matter who it was, right? And so we talk about what your dad built at UNLV. He'd have been front and center in L.A.
Yeah, he would have, and I think he would have won big there, too, and he certainly would have had an incredible experience. But, you know, again, he was made for college coaching because he was able to work with and develop and help kids that needed them the most. In the NBA, they're all millionaires. They don't need somebody to help guide them through their personal and social problems they were having. So, in an overall standpoint, you know, what place did my dad have a bigger impact? It certainly was in the college game.
Oh, no question. There's no question about it. And still today, if you walk the campus of UNLV or if you visit the Thomas and Mack Center, your dad has definitely been memorialized there. He's almost immortal when you talk about UNLV basketball, even with the state it's in now. There are still people that will travel around to either take a picture with the statue out front or at least get a glimpse of Jerry Tarkanian, the court itself, which, of course, also pays homage to your father.
Yeah, you know, I got a son named Jerry. He's 10 years old, and about 2 years ago, we're driving around town, and there was this Jerry Tarkanian Way, the street they named after him, and he'd already seen the statue in the court. And he says to me, "Dad, thank you so much for naming me Jerry." I said, "Why is that?" And he goes, "Because they named so many things after me." I said, "That in itself makes it worthwhile."
Danny, before I let you go, I want to get your take on the book once again, Rebel with a Cause, which is available right now for anyone who was interested in reading more about the legendary career of Jerry Tarkanian. Back to your inspiration for the book and what your ultimate goal was in releasing it.
Well, I wanted people to understand the kind of person my father was and the true success that he had. He was a person with no ego at all. He would always try to learn something from other coaches that were not nearly as acclaimed as him. He had this a great relationship with people, not only the players, as I mentioned, but the fans, big boosters. He got along with everybody, knew how to deal with people. And then I wanted to, you know, explain the struggles that he had with the NCAA and, you know, why what his position was really a very needed position because he was a voice for the kids that didn't have a voice and were being taken advantage of by the NCAA structure and the rules that they implemented. So I'm hoping that I got that across in the book and that the readers will have a better understanding of the kind of person my father was.
It's available right now, The True Story of Jerry Tarkanian, A Rebel with a Cause. Again, Danny Tarkanian, our guest right now. Danny, it was a pleasure to chat with you over the last 30 minutes to talk about your father's legendary career. I can't wait to finish reading the book. I really appreciate the time. It was a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Excellent conversation with Danny Tarkanian, again, the son of legendary coach Jerry Tarkanian and author of the new book, Rebel with a Cause. That's going to do it for us today. We will be back again on Thursday. Tomorrow, we'll be back in the broadcast booth for Emory High School Baseball as the Spartans will go toe-to-toe with Payson. Live coverage of that game will begin at about 2:45 tomorrow right here on KOAL. Be safe. I am out.